All right, we're back on the record. Mr. Biella, you can call your next witness. We'll just hold on for one moment. All right, Mr. Biella, you can go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. We call Mr. David Bickle.
Okay. Morning, Mr. Bickle. Before you testify, required to give you the oath and advise you of the penalty for perjury in North Dakota, which is a Class C felony punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000, maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. And being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Biella.
Thank you. Please state your name and business address.
My name is David Bickle. My address is Post Office Box 993, Bismarck, North Dakota, 58502.
And, Dave, what is the name of your business?
Bickle Consulting, LLC.
And briefly describe your education post-high school.
I hold a bachelor's and master's degrees from the University of Louisville in the field of biology, specializing in limnology, which is the study of the physical, chemical, and biological interactions of fresh water. And PhD from Ohio State University in geology.
And what is your experience in hydrology?
Well, academic training, of course, at Ohio State University. I designed and installed the groundwater monitoring system for the Larsen Mine, which is up in the northwestern part of the state, and that was in 1974 and 75, and it was designed to anticipate the requirements that were then being formulated for SMACRA. And had various consulting projects in the 70s and then throughout a large part of the 80s. And then 17 years from 1989 to 2006, I served as the groundwater and surface water hydrologist for the Reclamation Division of the Public Service Commission. Then from about 2007 to the present, following my retirement, I've consulted.
Just stepping back a second, you mentioned SMACRA. Could you please define for
Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act of 1977, I think I have that right, and that was the enabling law for the federal regulations and then, of course, the state regulations that are required to be equal to or more stringent than the federal regulations.
Okay. And what were your duties with the North Dakota Public Service Commission with respect to hydrology?
Basically, all aspects of surface and groundwater hydrology. That was the review of surface mining permits and related permitting documents to provide technical support and expertise to the Reclamation Division and Office of Surface Mining in those matters. Carry out mine inspections relative to hydrology and other matters, and to strengthen practices in hydrology in the Reclamation Division.
Okay. And while working for the North Dakota Public Service Commission, was a part of your job duties to review coal mine alluvial valley floor reports?
Yes.
And what is your experience with respect to alluvial valley floor determinations for coal mines?
I reviewed them, I don't know, and maybe in the numbers of dozens. This was not only previously submitted reports and prior to that permit findings, and here again to look at the extent of coverage and then gain insight for upgrading alluvial valley floor investigations. And then the review of in preparation of determinations for alluvial valley reports that were submitted during my tenure.
Did this include sharing and transferring information with the Federal Office of Surface Mining?
Yes, it did. And this was what the process allowed us to share information between other states and with OSM.
And have you made presentations to the Federal Office of Surface Mining at seminars with respect to alluvial valley floor determinations?
Yes. I guess over many years, I did this through the U.S. Office of Surface Mining's Office of Technology Transfer, and this included presentations and training at forums, seminars, training workshops. And this related not only to AVF, but other aspects of hydrology. Okay. And in addition to that, through the what they call the TIPS program, basically the technical program that deals with software and related technical training, I taught courses.
And since you've been in your consulting business, how many alluvial valley floor reports for coal mines have you prepared?
Roughly five, and probably covering close to 150 square miles. Here again, this is in North Dakota.
And were those reports reviewed and approved by the Public Service Commission?
Yes.
And were you retained by Coyote Creek Mining Company to prepare an alluvial valley floor report for its proposed new Coyote Creek mine?
Yes.
And when did you prepare that report?
Started work in May of 2012, and I believe the final draft was completed in the August of 2013.
And is a alluvial valley floor report, is that prepared prior to the permitting process?
Yes.
Why is that?
It's prepared ahead of time. It's basically a regulatory requirement, and this is so that the report is available and can be reviewed in detail so that a regulatory authority can make a determination prior to permit submission if an alluvial valley floor is present or not. And this will allow ample time so that the permit can address the needs of alluvial valley floors if they are present.
At this time, we're going to distribute an exhibit. I've discussed this with the hearing officer, and these exhibit numbers are a bit out of order. This is going to be exhibit number 13. We marked these way back 10, 12 days ago before the first hearing, and the way things have developed, it's resulted in a little bit of rejiggering of our testimony. So that's the reason why you're going to see exhibit number 13 at this mark number 13 now.
And hang on just before you continue, Mr. Biella, you've got it pre-marked as exhibit 13. I'm just going to note that it's Coyote Creek exhibit number 13 because we do already have Voigt exhibits 1 through I believe 14. So this will be Coyote Creek exhibit number 13, just for clarification.
Okay, thank you. And the also just a point of clarification, this exhibit was in part submitted as part of Mr. Voigt's testimony, but what we have here has a bit more detail from the same report, and that's why we're including it as an exhibit. for our case.
Okay.
Excuse me, Mr. Biella, could you reference which void exhibit it connects to? Do you know the number?
It appears to be Voigt Exhibit Number 5.
That's right, Your Honor.
Thank you.
So showing you, David, what has been marked Exhibit Number 13, is this the report you prepared?
Yes. However, it does not include Exhibit E. And that is because Exhibit E is about 305 pages of basic data, and that show really the water quality and quantity of streams in the study area. And the data are summarized in the narrative portion of the report.
So we've left that out just for purposes of brevity today, is that?
Bearing in mind that this report was submitted in digital format, so it was convenient to include it there, but obviously not in printed format.
Thank you. We would offer Exhibit Number 13.
Mr. Broughton, any objection?
No objection, but I would just note that my copy does have an Exhibit E.
It's listed in the index, but Exhibit E basic data has been omitted here, I believe.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
We have no objection.
Okay.
Your Honor, just a question.
Go ahead.
The Exhibit E data will be considered as part of the record, even though it's not here today. I just want to because I want to make sure that data is part of the record somewhere.
Well, it won't be unless it's offered and admitted. Is that something that the commission is looking to have?
I think the data is not what's in question. It's the interpretation of the data. So I think the data needs to be in the record because we have clearly, I think there's a different interpretation of it. No one has suggested the data was wrong. They've suggested the interpretation is wrong.
Okay. Mr. Biella, is Exhibit E something that you can obtain and submit, I guess, as a late filed exhibit?
Yes, we can do that, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Broughton, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
Okay. Coyote Creek Exhibit Number 13 will be admitted, and it will be supplemented with the complete data from Exhibit E as a late filed exhibit. You can continue.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Charles Norris, who testified for Mr. Voigt previously, stated on several occasions that he did not believe that independent data was prepared and considered in your report. Is that accurate?
No.
Please address the commission.
No.
And what independent data was prepared and reviewed by you in preparation of your AVF report?
I use information from many sources, including U.S. government data relating to hydrology, primarily from the U.S. Geological Survey, NRCS data on soils, NOAA data on weather, North Dakota government data from the State Water Commission, dealing with hydrologic information as well as water permits. Dakota Westmoreland Corporation, Beulah Mine, their previous AVF reports, and then surface water quality data from their reports, and also groundwater quality data. Available vegetation, land use, wetland, spring, and seep data being collected by extensive field surveys, at the time being conducted by Mr. Kelly Krabanoff of KDH Consulting, and soils information as was being collected in a preliminary state, for the permit area. Now, here again, these data are detailed, but were being collected for the mine permit, not specifically for the AVF study. And information from the soils came from the work underway by Mr. Mike Ulmer and Mr. C.G. Height of Prairie Soils Consulting. Existing groundwater monitoring wells that were installed, some in the 1980s and some in 2012 in alluvium, and available water levels at the time for those were examined. Preliminary geologic mapping by Coyote Creek Mining Company staff, and this is to relate the geologic strata, the coal beds, to possible spring and seep and their contributions to streams. Aerial photography to substantiate and augment Mr. Krabanoff's land use inventories and to review and spatially organize other data. And finally, PFC staff input. First, review the previously determined AVF areas, and also to look at the suitability of an area for this study, and also any areas of concern that may have been apparent to them.
And so in preparation of your report, do I understand you correctly that you used existing data and also new independent data to prepare your report?
Yes.
Now, Mr. Norris also stated in his testimony that he did not believe that the necessary borings and piezometer profiles for an alluvial valley floor determination were completed, and thus an accurate AVF determination could not have been made. Do you agree with that statement?
No.
And is the need for new borings and piezometer profiles required in OSM guidelines?
No, Mr. Biala.
Okay. You want me to repeat that question?
Yeah.
Mr. Norris stated in his testimony that he did not believe that the necessary borings and piezometer profiles for an alluvial valley floor determination were completed, and thus an accurate alluvial valley floor determination could not have been made. Do you agree with that statement?
No.
And is the need for new borings and piezometer profiles required in OSM guidelines?
No.
And do Mr. Norris's statements agree with OSM standards for preparing an alluvial valley floor report?
No.
And so new borings and piezometer profiles are not required for an AVF determination, is that correct?
Yes. Regulations require adequate data be provided to the regulatory agency to make AVF determination. Yeah. Now, of course, if no data are available in an area, data acquisition specifically for AVF study could possibly be necessary to meet those report requirements.
And is this area of North Dakota, would you deem it data rich or poor in terms of AVF data?
West Central North Dakota is an established coal mining area. Abundant data from the 1970s, well, principally about 1974 during the period of concern about rapid expansion of development along the Missouri River. And that data acquisition continues to the present. The Knife River drainage has established mines, and there are data available.
So would you describe it as data rich?
Yes, that's kind of a vernacular term.
And all of this data is not included in your report, but can you state why that is the case?
Here again, these data are available to the regulatory agency, government reports, PSC records, and direct personal communication with the sources of the data. And this way they can substantiate and verify my summary. On the other hand, a summary is more meaningful to others. Here again, looking to Exhibit E, Mr. Steffen said we're dealing with over 300 pages of printed information. And if all the data sets, all the emails, all the notes, if all these data were included, it would make an AVF report extremely voluminous and would probably confuse rather than inform.
And have there been other alluvial valley floor reports which have come to the same conclusion as you did on Kyle Creek?
Yes.
Would you please identify those other reports and for whom they were prepared?
Oh, in general terms, several in the Knife River and Square Butte Creek and the Missouri River proper drainages regarding sub-irrigation. But most important is Dakota Westmoreland Corporation's AVF report for, I believe, revision 22 of KRSB 8603. And this covered Coyote Creek from its mouth south through Section 31, Township 143 North, Range 88 West. Basically, most of the downstream portions of Coyote Creek, and this area, since it was previously determined, was outside the study area of this report. And to make that a little clearer, let's look at exhibits A and B of the Alluvial Valley Floor Evaluation Report of Coyote Creek. See if I can get there too. Exhibit A shows the area covered in the Dakota Westmoreland Corporation. If I can shorten that to DWC, if everyone will understand. Shows the area covered by that Alluvial Valley Floor Report. However, it doesn't, Exhibit A doesn't, clearly, unless you're extremely familiar with the area, show Coyote Creek. But if you flip to Exhibit B, they're not exactly to scale, but they're close enough that you can basically see Coyote Creek, and flipping back and forth, you can see the area that was previously determined. And, of course, the boundaries of this AVF report exclude that area.
And with respect to the DWC report, was that determined to be an AVF or non-AVF?
The PSC determined that there were no AVFs present in the area of the DWC report.
And are any hayfields of Mr. Voigt included within that Section 31 area?
Yes, they are.
Is there two hayfields?
Yes, they will not show up on here, but there's, here again, kind of speaking from memory, I believe there's one to the north portion, probably in the north half of Section 31, and then there's one toward the south half, and they're both in Section 31.
Now, we'd offer the further testimony of Mr. Bickel as an expert in hydrology and preparation of alluvial valley floor reports.
Mr. Broughton?
No objection.
Mr. Deutsch, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, Mr. Biella just offered the testimony of Mr. Bickle. Is that of an expert?
We have no objection.
Okay. The testimony of Mr. Bickle will be received as that of an expert in those areas. You can continue.
And was the Dakota Westmoreland Alluvial Valley Floor Report reviewed by PSC staff?
Yes, it was, and they determined that no AVFs were present in that report's area.
And realizing your report is quite detailed, would you please summarize your findings as to whether you found an alluvial valley floor within the evaluation area that you studied?
I found none, and after review, the Reclamation Division reached the same conclusion and determined no AVFs were present in the study area evaluated in the Coyote Creek Mining Company 2013 report.
Now, was the possibility of sub-irrigation considered in your report?
Yes.
And what does your report state with respect to the possibility of sub-irrigation?
No significant areas of potential sub-irrigation were identified in Mr. Krabanoff's vegetation and wetland studies. No areas of soils indicative of sub-irrigation were observed or mapped by Prairie Soils Consulting. No static water level and groundwater monitoring wells, including or indicated any shallow saturated zones in the floodplain areas. No areas of standing water within a few feet below, basically where soil surfaces come onto the banks of streams were seen. This would indicate a probability of shallow saturated zones under stream floodplains. Now, small trivial bands of sub-irrigation a few feet wide can occur along banks of all bodies of standing water. And these are small. We're talking a scale of a few square feet. They're often patchy. And these are things I think everyone has commonly observed. Basically, we're talking about an area where soils and vegetation slopes down very close to water level. These areas are insignificant in terms of agriculture. There were two small areas, we're talking here, in the range of about 15 acres, that were identified along the Knife River that could have been or were potentially sub-irrigated, and these are too small to be considered agriculturally significant. And the observations of Mr. Ulmer showed that they were not managed differently from adjacent areas.
And how is that lack of significance of these small areas you mentioned reflected in your report?
I didn't mention the small, insignificant patches that you see along every stream because most environmental scientists and even most lay people are familiar with such areas. But the two areas along Knife River are described extensively in the Ulmer and Height report, which is Appendix A.
Now, pursuant to the Office of Surface Mining Standards and Guidelines, is it correct that an AVF was not present in the study area of your report?
Correct.
And have you reviewed the report on alfalfa production prepared by Mr. Voigt and included as his Exhibit 7?
I have examined it, yes.
And do you believe there are sub-irrigated soils on his lands capable of reaching the roots of common grassland plants?
No, not capable of reaching the rooting deaths of common assemblages of ray or of rangeland or hayland crop plants. Static water levels we've observed in the area are 8 to 10 feet below surface in late summer and most of the year. And these, however, are potentially reachable by deep-rooted species such as alfalfa, but not by common species.
And what does this report actually indicate?
Well, moving back to the obvious, it shows that regional climate in west-central North Dakota enables areas other than stream floodplains to produce hay crops, including alfalfa, and thus regional livestock production is not dependent on stream valleys for hay production and other feed, as is often the case in arid areas further to the west. Deep-rooted species such as alfalfa can utilize saturated zones on uplands as well as on floodplains. And here again, this is due to the higher precipitation in west-central North Dakota. And alfalfa is often rotated with shallow-rooted crops on many of these areas, here again, depending upon moisture conditions.
But does its presence indicative of an AVF?
No, it is not.
Now, pursuant to the Office of Service Mining guidelines, does sub-irrigation exist on Mr. Voigt's land in the study area of the Coyote Creek AVF report?
Not here again, with the exception of, the planting of alfalfa, but basically, no.
And did the Public Service Commission's reclamation staff conduct an independent review of your report?
Yes. As I mentioned before, in consultation with them, we determined the previously determined areas and the appropriate areas to be included in this study. And again, any areas they saw of concern to them at a preliminary stage. To my understanding and knowledge, they carried out informal field visits to the area prior to and during the review of the report, and they conducted detailed office review of the data and a formal field review of the study area.
I'm going to show you, it's marked as Exhibit 14. Is this a PSC letter regarding its review of your AVF report?
Yes, it is.
We would offer exhibit number 14.
Mr. Broughton, any objection?
No objection.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No objection.
Okay. Coyote Creek exhibit number 14 is admitted.
And did the Public Service Commission staff conduct its own field investigation prior to making its alluvial valley floor determination?
Yes. I discussed that before, but they did carry out a formal field review as well as other opportunities to informally look at the area.
And what was the PSC staff recommendation as to whether an alluvial valley floor may exist in the evaluation area?
Looking at the second paragraph in Coyote Creek Exhibit 14, basically it says, we have determined that those areas of the AVF evaluation report study area do not constitute alluvial valley floors as defined by North Dakota Century Code 38-14.1-2.
So if I understand correctly, did the Public Service Commission staff agree with your recommendation that no alluvial valley floors exist within the evaluation area?
Yes.
I have no further questions of Mr. Bickle.
Mr. Broughton?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Bickle, there was significant discussion about how this area is so-called data-rich with respect to alluvial valley floor determinations. As you indicated in your report, you didn't collect any additional data yourself for purposes of your report, right?
Right.
Direct your attention back to Exhibit 13, Coyote Creek Exhibit 13. And I'll start by referencing Exhibit C. Actually, let's look at Exhibit A. Is it your understanding that the area on this map in pink is the Dakota Westmoreland Company study in 2009 for permit revision 22?
Yes.
Okay. If we turn to Exhibit B, if you look at the top right of this, there's an explanation area.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an indication of areas shaded gray, and it says that they're sub-irrigated and or naturally flood-irrigated sites. Now, if you can picture where that Dakota Westmoreland 2009 study was, the specific sections where that study was conducted, can you point out the section to me that has the most gray shaded area in it?
That would be Section 31.
And that's the section that contains Mr. Voigt's alfalfa fields.
That is correct.
At one point when Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco asked about having Mr. Deutsch and others ask questions, I said I was fine with that if we would have a little bit of leeway for me to consult with experts in questioning other witnesses. And so I'm going to ask if I can take advantage of that now and take just a minute here to discuss something with our expert before continuing with the examination.
How much time did you have in mind?
I don't think we need to break necessarily, maybe a minute.
That's fine. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that and ready to go.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Bickle, can I have you turn to page 24 of your report? In number 8, you indicate that the water table on floodplains range from 8 to 30 feet below the ground surface in the study area. You would agree that alfalfa could tap a water table at that level, right?
Yes.
And indeed, the water table level is not the zone that the roots tap into. It's actually a zone above that. Is that right?
Yes. Well, it can be, yes.
Sure. And then in paragraph number 9, you indicate that soils on the floodplains in the study area are dominated by straw loam. And I assume you're familiar with the term capillary rise?
Yes.
And would straw loam be a type of soil that would be especially conducive to capillary rise?
Most likely.
And so even at a very low water table, these soils in this area would be very conducive to sub-irrigation?
They are not considered sub-irrigated soils. And here again, the effect of capillary rise I don't think would overcome the depths we're talking about. And here again, you're talking about the availability and the function of water in the saturated zone and above it in terms of significantly enhancing productivity or even maintaining crops.
And the saturated zone, are you referring to the water table itself?
Yes.
And when we're discussing sub-irrigation, the water table itself will rise and fall over time, is that right?
Yes.
And above that water table, there will be a zone where the soil is additionally saturated as a result of that rising and falling water table.
Are you speaking of saturated? Are you speaking of water in the capillary zone under tension?
Water in the capillary zone under tension. And so you would have more water closer to ground level in soils that are more conducive to capillary rise.
You will have that in all soils to some degree, yes.
But to a greater degree in straw loam?
Possibly.
And when you say possibly, is it more likely?
Like I said, it is likely in all soils to some degree, yes.
Is it more likely in some soils?
Yes.
And is straw loam one of those soils?
Can be, yes.
Do you know how deep the water table is in section 31 within the study area?
From the two wells that are available in Section 31, I believe one is toward the north end of the section and one toward the south end, roughly between 8 and 10 feet
and
below the surface.
Are you referring to specific readings from those two wells?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and do you recall what the specific readings from each well was?
Not off the top of my head. Preliminary readings, I believe I've cited in the report, and other readings have been available subsequent to that.
Would it be fair to say then that for both wells, the readings were between 8 and 10 feet?
I think that would be a fair characterization.
How many readings were taken from those wells?
At the time of the report preparation?
Yeah.
Only a couple. They were installed, almost concurrently with the preparation of the report and gathering of data.
And when you say a couple, do you mean one reading from each well or two readings from each well?
I would have to recall possibly two from each well. And here again, these were in the late summer and fall of the year, to my recollection.
So, to your recollection, all of these levels or these wells were tested in the late summer to early fall?
Yes, and then subsequent readings tested in other periods of the year, and it's not a lot of variance, as I recall.
One moment. Mr. Bickle, I just ask that you try to speak up a little bit and stay fairly close to the mic. It is being streamed and recorded, just so we make sure we pick everything up. Thank you.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Are you aware of, well, let me ask a different question. You indicated that you had reviewed the production reports that were provided by Mr. Voigt, correct?
Yes, I looked at them. Here.
Are these wells located in the areas where he has increased production?
They are probably within a couple hundred feet of his field edge.
How much do you think the water table or the capillary zone could fluctuate within a couple hundred feet?
Within these sediments, probably not to any great degree. The two wells are here again within that 8 to 10 foot range, and they are maybe 8/10 of a mile apart, north and south part of the section.
And when you say not to any great degree, can you put that into number of feet for us?
Here again, I said the variance, in other words, the difference between the two wells, and as you characterized it, 8 to 10 feet depth, so we're talking a couple of feet.
And what is the potential depth of the capillary zone in this area?
I would not venture a guess.
And you're indicating that you think the water table could fluctuate 1 or 2 feet within this area, is that fair?
Yes.
And upon what do you base that opinion?
The readings in the groundwater monitoring wells.
The two readings from each of these wells that you indicated and referred to?
Yes, and then that's been substantiated by subsequent readings in those wells.
And what were the subsequent readings in those wells?
Oh, I'm looking at data that were provided to me quite recently by Coyote Creek Mining Company. And for the well toward the north end of Section 31, these are readings from August of 2012 going up to September of 2014, and the depth to water range from 8.68 feet to 10.84 feet. In the well that's toward the south end of the section, here again from September of 2012 to September of 2014. Here again, we're talking 9 readings, I believe, from both wells. In the south well, it ranged from 9.35 feet to 10.59 feet.
And what were the actual dates of each of those readings?
Okay. For the north well, 8-12-2012, 11-7-2012, 12-14-2012, 1-16-2013, 3-21-2013, 5-28-2013, 9-13-2013, 3-24-2014, 6-30-2014, and 9-15-2014. For the well in the south part of the section, 9-14-2012, 11-18-2012, 12-14-2012, 3-21-2013, 5-28-2013, 9-13-2013, 3-24-2014, 6-22-2014, and 9-12-2014.
And are these readings and dates contained anywhere in your report?
No, these are subsequent to my report.
And are you reading from a document you received from Coyote Creek Mining Company right now?
That is correct.
And Your Honor, may I approach?
Approach the witness.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
May I take a look at that?
Sure, certainly. May I deliver these to?
Yeah, he'll come get it.
There are two reports containing data that have formed the basis of Mr. Bickel's testimony here, and I would request that these two reports be made part of the record and entered into evidence.
Mr. Biella, did you want to offer those documents that your witness was testifying from as exhibits?
Yes, that would be fine, Your Honor. We can do that.
Okay. I don't know where your pre-marked exhibits leave off, but it might make sense to have those as exhibit numbers.
15 and 16, would that be okay?
Sure.
We have no objection. It's our understanding that these are publicly available records.
Okay. And if the witness is through with them, if I could get a copy of those and have them marked and...
If there are no further questions on them, that I have to refer to them.
No, I don't think so.
Here, I can... I think we also need to have copies made so everybody knows what we're looking at. And so I think we'll just take a very brief break at this point, maybe 5 minutes, and I can get these marked and have copies made. And then when we come back on the record, we can see if there's any objections and we can get those admitted. But I want everybody to have the opportunity to be looking at the same thing before we do that. So let's take a short break.